Good morning, everybody. I apologize that I came late. I just got off this morning and then having to look for my car. That's why I am here late. And morning, Minister. Morning, DG. Morning, members. Morning, everybody from Parliament. And morning, everybody from the media. And morning, everybody else from the public. I trust I've greeted everybody else. Is there anyone that I haven't greeted? Who? Media, Parliament, public, members of Parliament, Minister, and the department led by the DG. Somebody is complaining out there? No. Thank you. Members, we had a session last week and two things happened. One is we decided that we do not engage with the third quarterly review last week. For two reasons that we all explained. One is that we received a document in the meeting, and another one, we do not have any accounting officer or the minister in the meeting. We then today have both the minister and the DG. The DG has just whispered with me here that he has a conference around 12. So he apologized that he may have to excuse himself around 11:45. Apparently it's a long-standing appointment. But the minister is with us. I see the other member, I cannot remember the name. Are you part full time or are you an alternate? If you sorry, speak to the
Honorable Chair, I am alternate to Inkosi Bekulu. My name is Simang. From the IFP, we are going to swap positions and the Inkosi will be in the Land Reform and Rural Development as full-time, where I am presently full-time, and I'll be full-time here, but there will be correspondence to that effect.
Okay, thank you very much, Babu Msima. Members, without really waste of time, we have received the documents. And then, I guess, Minister, without, you know, waste of time, we shall allow you to take us through either by way of, you know, I guess we all are familiar with all the team members from the department. I don't think we need to introduce them, unless there is anybody else new, or unless there are any new responsibilities on the old faces that know. Okay. When I look at you, I just, you know, in the olden days, all white people look the same. like it was with black people. They all look the same. That's why we would even use 2-3 passports of different people's names, you know, with the same face of another person to go across the borders without being caught. Mama Palisa, we are allowing them to the department to introduce.
No, Jefferson. Good morning, everybody. Morning, Chair. they can introduce themselves when they are presenting, Chairperson, according to time. Time is against us. I would propose that way forward is that they may introduce themselves as you. I don't see any new faces, Chairperson. If there are new faces, they will introduce themselves, or the minister will talk to us while she's presenting, or the DG.
For sake of Mr. Van Dalen and Mr. Steyn, please, as you speak, I'm so and so. I have this responsibility. There are only two people who are known, who are new, rather, sorry, in the committee. They were in other committees. Okay, Minister, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honourable members of the committee. The performance report is essentially an administrative report. I'll hand over to the Director General to immediately do the presentation, and then as we go along, we'll do the comments. I'm sure I don't need to introduce the Director General. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister, Chairperson, honorable members. This is the report of the third quarter of this financial year, 2011-2012. As everyone here is aware, our vision as the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries is to be a leading agriculture, dynamic, united, prosperous in the people-centered sector. Our strategic goals are to increase profitable production of wood, fiber, and timber products by all categories of producers, subsistence, smallholder, and commercial. It is also to ensure that we have sustainable management of our natural resources, as well as an effective national regulatory services and risk management systems. It is to achieve transformation in the sector and to unite the sector. And it's also about increased contribution of the sector to economic growth and development, as well as effective and efficient governance. This overview is of the third quarter of the 2011-2012 financial year. The presentation will focus attention on the departmental achievements made during the third quarter, analyze the performance status of planned deliverables and challenges encountered. The department identified the following five areas as core to focus service delivery during the financial year. First one is to reduce the cost of basic foodstuffs as well as the cost of living. Second is employment creation, increasing the number of participants in the DAF sectors through support for smallholders and processors. To improve the income and condition of farm workers, foresters, and fishers, enhance exports, and ensure the sustainable use of natural resources. Our budget program performance relates to the following areas: administration, economic development, trade and marketing, food security and agrarian reform, agricultural production, health and food safety, forestry and natural resources management, as well as fisheries management. Coming to administration, which is program one. The employee performance management and development system was successfully rolled out, and a total of 279 employees were trained. Of these, 103 were trained on short courses and 176 on accredited courses. 533 employees participated in the screening tests, including HIV. 11 million rands 480,000 of Mafisa loans have been dispersed to 876 clients during the period under review. 2,138 temporary and 845 permanent jobs, resulting in a total of 2,983 jobs, were created nationally through CASP. There is a report in the external lecture that gives more detail about this. On the program Economic Development, Trade and Marketing, which is program 2, a concept document for the establishment and institutionalization of grain value chain networks was approved by DEXCO. 92 farmers were trained in marketing skills, and 23 cooperatives have been established in various provinces. As part of implementing the India, Brazil, and South Africa Agreement, IPSA, the following engagements were held. There was the IPSA Summit on the 18th of October 2011, a joint working committee on the 12th and 13th of October 2011, as well as the foot and mouth disease workshop on the 23rd and 25th of November last year. A program of action has been developed for BRICS during the working ministerial meeting in Agriculture and Agrarian Development in China on the 28th of October 2011. Coming to program Food Security and Agrarian Reform, 10,199 smallholder producers were identified for support. In the first state, it was 131. In Limpopo, it was 6,318. In KZN, 82. In Mpumalanga, 1,816. In the Western Cape, 229. In Gauteng, 53. In Northwest, 857. Eastern Cape, 614. And Northern Cape, 99. 3,402 producers are still training on various programs, including beef production, goat production, sheep production, animal health, cake production, vegetable production, poultry production, and production management of piggeries. The distribution of trainees according to provinces as follows: 1,200 from the Eastern Cape, 208 from the Western Cape, 90 from Northwest, 100 from Limpopo, 42 from Gauteng, 150 from Free State, 800 from KZN, 320 from the Northern Cape, and 120 from Mpumalanga. And 300 of the Red Meat Abattoirs Association. Furthermore, the three line function CETAs, Agri CETA, FPNM CETA, and Food Health CETA, provided training to about 1,025 beneficiaries. Continuing with food security and agrarian reform, 5,409 household gardens have been established in Gauteng, Limpopo, and in the northwest. 32 community gardens in Gauteng and Limpopo, and 58 institutional gardens in Gauteng and Limpopo established. 30,902 starter packs were distributed in the Western Cape, in Limpopo, and KZN, as well as the northwest. And 53 families received free seed packs in the northwest. One food park has been established in Lusiko in Limpopo, and one agri park was launched in Gauteng. Again, continuing with food and agrarian reform, 49 boreholes were drilled during the quarter, 148 extension officers were trained in extension suit online, and 818 extension officers registered for qualification upgrading. The draft food security policy has been developed, and consultation has taken place in different fora. Submission has been made for presentation to the Intergovernmental Ministerial Committee. Departmental training processes have been conducted with a focus being for the implementation of the Zero Hunger campaign. Program 4, Agricultural Production, Health and Food Safety. The following interventions were implemented in the third quarter. The department conducted 43,899 inspections at the ports of entry. 20,746 identification marks were registered. 12 export facilities were audited. 397 new food business operating codes were allocated. And 273,187 export document certificates were issued. 10,776 import permits were issued during the period October to December 2011. 97 reproduction operators were registered. Continuing with agricultural production health and food safety, we had to deal with the following disease outbreaks: avian influenza. The outbreak continues, and a total of 35,066 birds have been slaughtered for disease control purposes, and owners paid a total of 47 million. On the contagious equine meningitis, the national surveillance indicates that a total of 19 stallions were affected. These were put under quarantine and treated. The authorities for the appointment for the export standards and requirements for canned food published in the Government Gazette on the 23rd December 2011, and 280,418 temporary import permits for animals for purpose of feedlot, slaughter, pasture, and 42 permanent permits were issued. Still continuing on our corporation health and food safety, a total of 747 agrochemicals were processed and registered. 23 of these were stock remedies, 85 agricultural remedies, 142 fertilizers, 116 pest control operators, 262 farm seeds, 19 advertisements, 51 import permits, 42 free sale certificates, and 7 pack sizes. 10 new taxa were tabled as plans and amended regulations for plant fertilizers published in the Government Gazette on the 18th of November 2011. 31 certificates under the Plant Fertilizers Act were issued with the agreed standards. 47 import and 34 export permits of genetically modified organisms were also issued within prescribed period. Coming to Program 5, Forests and Natural Resources Management. The conference of the parties, COP17, was held in Durban from the 28th of November to the 11th of December 2011, and it emerged some key decisions on Green Climate Fund, adaptation, technology, and support for all developing country action. Although decision on agriculture has been deferred to COP18, agriculture has for the first time been put on the agenda of the subsidiary board for scientific and technological advice to consider views related to agriculture at its 36th session, with the aim of exchanging views and conference of parties adopting a decision on this matter at COP18. They have hosted and participated in 3 high-level events, namely the Agriculture and Rural Development Day on Forest Day 5 and Climate Smart Agriculture, as well as 3 technical side events in the form of interactive seminars held in parallel with COP17 related to Climate Change Response Expo. Still on Program 5, 269 jobs were created in the third quarter through Atlantic Convention. 105 of the on-off these were in Eastern Cape, 14 in Limpopo Province, and Mpumalanga Plantations, 101 jobs in Western Cape and 15 in KZN, resulting in 1,209 Atlantic Convention jobs created from the beginning of the financial year. 345 jobs were created on other forest operations during the period under review. 1,329 full-time equivalent jobs were created through land care. 11,593 trees were planted, while 4,499 trees were distributed, of which those numbers, 2,399, were in Limpopo and Mpumalanga, and 2,100 were in Western Cape. 695,761 trees have been planted since the beginning of the financial year. More than 193 hectares of indigenous forests and woodlands were rehabilitated. 3,704 hectares were rehabilitated through CARA enforcement and 1,085 hectares through land care projects. 183 forest growers have supported in terms of training, licenses, funding, technical assistance, and environmental impact assessments, and 8,000 seed units were supplied to growers in Limpopo, Mpumalanga regions. coming to Program 6. The Marine Fish Farmers Association has been established and approved by the Minister. The Fisherman's Heritage Project has been established to develop a fish processing plant in Claremont and recruitment of beneficiaries, clearing of the site and training are continuing. Two new fish processing projects have been initiated, one in Port North, another one in Elands Bay. A total of 8 working for fisheries programs are fully operational. 2 have completed planning and are now recruiting beneficiaries for implementation. 6 projects are in the planning phase. Continuing with fisheries, 1,017 jobs and 82,744 total person days of work were created through working for fisheries program along the Eastern Cape coastline, Western Cape, Northern Cape coastline, KwaZulu-Natal coastline. In the metropole, fishing up as Cotton Bay, Cock Bay, and Hull Bay, and in the Overbeck region, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and Claremont Fisheries Heritage. These jobs were formed by monitoring of fisheries cash data, maintenance, cleaning, patrol, safety, and control in the fishing apples, development of processing facilities, and deployment of military veterans to enhance the enforcement capacity of DAF. Consultation process for the development of small-scale fisheries policy has been completed, and the report submitted to the National Economic Development and Labour Council network. Approval has been granted to appoint a service provider to develop an implementation plan. At this stage, Chair, I would like to invite the CFO to take us through the expenditure trends, and I'll come back to comment on the challenges. Thank you very much. Mr. Khatwai.
Thank you, TG. Good morning, Minister. Good morning, Chair. And good morning to the members. I'll start with administration. Just for the quarter three, we spent 343,000. And then agricultural production, health, and food safety. Out of the 934 million that we had as a budget, in quarter three we spent 246 million. And then food security and agrarian reform, we spent 418 million of the 1.2 billion. And then trade promotion and market access, we spent 55 million of the 205. I must say the budget is for the whole year, Chair. And then under for forestry, we spent 206 out of the 895 budget. And then for fisheries, we spent 94 million out of the 345 million. And then using economic classification just for the quarter three, for compensation of employees, we spent 358 million against the budget of 1.3 billion. And then for goods and services, it was 205 million. And then for interest and rent on land, we spent 199 against 943. And then on total transfers and subsidies, we spent 792 million out of the 2.7 billion. Then for capital payment for capital assets, we spent 5 million out of the 77 million. And on the next page, we have put the reasons for the underspending. But generally, I must say, overspending and underspending, most of the reasons relate to our conditional grants. We can move over to the next slide. Then on the next slide, I would concentrate on the column that has the budget and then the combined quotas, which is quota 1, 2, and 3. Under administration, we have already spent 1 billion out of the 1.3 billion, which accounts to 82.4%. And then for agricultural production, health, and food safety, we have spent 632 million against 934 budget, which amounts to 67.7%. And then for food security and agrarian reform, we have spent 824 million. Against a budget of 1.2 billion, which is 65.8. And then trade promotion and market access, we have spent 146 million against a budget of 205, which is 71.4. And then forestry, we have spent 512 million against a budget of 895 million, which is 57.2. And then for fisheries, we have spent 268 million against a budget of 345, which is 77.6%. All in all, the department has spent 70.1% of its budget. Then using economic classification, for compensation of employees, we have spent 985 million against a budget of 1.3 billion, which is 75.4. And then for goods and services, we have spent 471 million against a 791 budget, which is 59.6. And then for interest and rent, we have spent 411,000 against a 943,000, which is 43.6. And then for subsidies and transfers, we have spent 2 billion against 2.7 billion budget, which amounts to 72.1. And then for payment for capital asset, we have spent only 13 million against 77 million, which is 17.5. Thank you, TG, and over to you.
Thanks, Chef. Just to tie up the presentation, Chef, I think we're saying that with regard to challenges, one of them is the sustainability of our funded project. By this, we mean that we need to ensure that when we exit, okay, that these projects can find their feet. And I think fundamental in that is ensure that there are market linkages for them. So that once there's no longer MAFISA fund, the project can survive. On stakeholder engagement, we have been developing a stakeholder engagement strategy. But more concretely, we are now having a delivery forum which should be held in the next month in March. We should seek to draw in all the relevant stakeholders in the sector to work with us in the implementation of our programs for the remainder of this term. Disease outbreaks, we have comprehensive responses to the disease outbreaks. There was a workshop we had last year in July that mapped out our challenge on how to respond to disease outbreaks. I think the challenge that we have in this regard, Chair, is that we're not communicating enough about our engagement with the sector with regard to readiness and response to diseases. On intergovernmental relations, we have reported that we have undertaken a program of deployment SMS members to districts to reinforce our work with various levels of government and to ensure that every senior official has got a responsibility for a particular geographic area in the country, which they have to visit, which they have got to monitor, which will hold them accountable for. It also improves our work with the provinces on the ground. And we want to continue these periodic visits by SMS members to the various areas in the country. The last challenge is related to escalation of operational costs of research and control vessels, which compromises our focus on other fisheries responsibilities. I think that is self-explanatory. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. Are you fine?
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you, Chairperson. I think that when we look at Stats SA's record of us creating 26,000 jobs during the third quarter of the last financial year, we have to remember that these jobs have been created under the climate of us losing 40,000 jobs every quarter. So in actual fact, we created 66,000 jobs. The 40 would be what we lose every quarter. So for us to have an increase in job creation, we had to first make up the 40,000 that we were losing every quarter and then add to that the 26,000. So if we've created 40, 40,000 jobs to break even to a zero balance. We needed 40,000 just to break even. Then we've created a 26,000 additional jobs. So for this quarter, we created 66,000 jobs. And these are not according to our stats. These are stats, SA figures. So I think that that is the biggest outcome that we can put on the table as to present as jobs created. So a number of these jobs have been created through the Masibambisane program. So the Zero Hunger Masibambisane program is really showing that it can create jobs, and it's able to massify jobs and agricultural production. We'll continue massifying this project during this financial year, especially in the former homeland. We've rolled it out into Eastern Cape and Mpumalanga. It's an initiative which is managed and championed by the president himself. So we hope to, in fact, be sustaining this job creation projects, because we are working with a backlog of several hundred thousand jobs which were lost in the sector. What is also significant about this 26,000 jobs that we say we've created in this quarter is that since 1970, agriculture has had a negative job growth. So the growth has been going down in agriculture since 1970. And it's the first time since 1970 that agriculture is showing a spike in job creation. So it is not for us to claim an easy victory, because we need to maintain these jobs. The sustainability of these jobs are now at question. We are looking at this analyzing the Stats SA reports for the fourth quarter, and we work quite closely with Stats SA in terms of the analysis of job creation. We will not only use our own statistics which we're getting from the provinces. So it's very important that we correlate the statistics we see from provinces with that of Stats SA. We have previously questioned the accuracy of Stats SA statistics, so we don't want to get excited too soon. So this is not for us to get excited and to blow out trumpets. This is just to say that something we're doing is happening, and it's happening correctly. How we sustain it is going to be the proof of the pudding. We need to show this increase over a sustained period of time. It is only then that we'll be happy in agriculture, forestry and fisheries. Towards the end of the presentation, I'll also present you how we have to upgrade our planning towards the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee, where we are now receiving budgets for silos, fencing, irrigation systems, irrigation schemes, an irrigation scheme in the Eastern Cape, one in Mzibubo is in the Eastern Cape. We're looking at KwaZulu-Natal, and then the Falas irrigation scheme from the Northern Cape right to Taung in Northwest. And that would be also huge capital expenditure for agriculture. So I think the next financial year is going to be, this forthcoming financial year is going to be extremely challenging for us, because not only have we received an additional billion in the Division of Revenue funding, we'll also be receiving the money through the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
Members, that is the presentation on the third quarterly review. It's a fragment review. We did receive apologies from the Deputy Minister, also from Mrs. Di Chicello, Also, Mrs. Twala was here last night. Unfortunately, she had to fly back because of an emergency at home. And also, Mr. Abram, we did receive those apologies. We also agreed that we need to have a special session on CASP as we receive the third quarterly review. CASP would be Comprehensive Agriculture Support Program. That session shall also have to draw your HODs from provinces. And then we'll also be extending the invitation to the chairpersons of committees in the province on agriculture. Okay, members, that is the report. I see a hand of Mrs. Paliso, Mrs. Kane, and Mr. Mandela.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Minister and DG, I just want to say to the DG that we are also part of the DG's program. We do need you and your attention in the Portfolio Committee more than the conferences that are outside Portfolio Committee business. Because there are some clarity issues and issues that we need you to give us a direction on as the portfolio. Because when we are uninformed, we will attack you unnecessarily. So, while it will be more pleasant to be knowledgeable and having the benefit of the real information of the department rather than be informed by the media. Thank you, Chair. I want to come to program fisheries, Honorable Minister. The first one I really want to say, we welcome the military veterans deployment to the enforcement unit of DAF. That's one, we must welcome it. Secondly, Minister, I really appreciate that you are here because I want to bring under your attention the MCM branch that is only Western Cape situated. It's a problem. It's not productive for other provinces, Honorable Minister. Why I'm saying that, I want to support the statement I'm making. It is Western Cape based. Provinces have reps inside the fisheries unit. Province don't really know who represents them. They don't have access to these individuals. Those individuals have not really insight of dynamica in the different provinces. That's only also a change I want to put into your basket. That must be systematic change. That must be systematically changed in the near future, Honorable Minister. That was an old system. So that system cannot be a system that will be workable for the democracy, Minister. People have to travel there. I'm talking about the poorest of the poor. I'm not talking of people who have money. I'm not talking of people who benefited all these years in this sector. I'm just talking poorest of the poor, the gap. So we must bridge that gap. Honorable Minister, I also want to bring under your attention that when we've got a special session about the CASP, really we must also get information on how are the fish farmers going to benefit, because they don't really have a fund, the fund that is shown or presented to us as the Marine Fund is not benefiting our people down there. I don't want to go to the detail because I don't want to waste any time here, because we always talk about that. Minister, you are aware. DG, you are aware. We do have several meetings about this fund not reaching the real people, but reaching those who do have. And also, I want also to stress the special session about CASP must also speak to the harbour facilities, Honourable Chair. The harbour facilities of the different coastal provinces, not harbour facility of Western Cape based only. Saying that, and also we must talk about the total allowable catch. I do see this presentation, DG, I'm deviating because it doesn't talk to the real issues on the ground. So I'm going down there. Sorry for doing that, but I have to. The total allowable catch, the rights, Minister, we have to safeguard that the rights given to the historically disadvantaged fishers, just like similar to the land question, they are given areas that have nothing. So automatically, when they are evaluated, they lose their rights and their permits because they didn't catch something. They were given sites that doesn't have any catch for them or benefit. They don't have the benefit to catch. They don't have gear. They must go and be shadows under the different gurus, mafia guru of the fishing sector, to be absorbed into the big vessels market. They are the marketers. They are also these joint ventures that are formed with these small people are just a whole fronting. Minister, we will have to have as the chairperson have correctly stated, that really we will have to have a truth reconciliation and a truth commission about this fishing sector. We don't need to beat around the bush anymore. It's too much. The system must be changed. This is a country where all of us must have the benefit of the wealth of this country. I thank you, Chair.
Mrs. Payne.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I also want to thank the Minister for attending the meeting. Chairperson, I think we need to start under administration. We mentioned it last time, but I think it's important if the Minister is here also to hear the concerns, that the concerns in the industry is about the high rate of vacancies in the department, and I'm sure you yourself is concerned about this, and the acting positions, and what is the program or strategy that's going to be followed to fill these positions. There are also concerns out there that people that do fill the positions or get the posts is not always suitably qualified for that specific positions, and we mentioned, you know, specific people that need specific knowledge about a certain position. So there's definitely a huge concern about that. And then, Chair, just on the jobs, and I'm also a bit skeptical, and I'm very happy if that was the real amount of jobs created. But when I read through the documents, and I'm glad we received this other thick one last on outcome 7. That's together with rural development and land reform. Something that is of concern is that there's so many overlapping things. For instance, support to small-scale farmers, support to farmers that receive land, and all of that. Is it counted under agriculture and then basically double counted on the land reform also? So I think when we get these documents in future, it would assist us if we can see specifically what the target of agriculture was. And then for land reform, their specific input and targets. So there's a lot of cross-cutting programs in the two, under the two departments. And then, Chair, just a question on your numbers when you read. I'm new to this portfolio, so when we read the documents, I read the first quarter and now the third quarter. And I just want to make an example under the Mafisa loans. in your first quarter it says 898 loans have been distributed. Now in the third quarter it says 876 clients. So it's, I presume it's not cumulative. Every quarter speaks to that quarter's loans, if I understand that correctly. I just wanted to clarify that. And then, Chair, I'm happy that you spoke about the CASP program, that we're going to specifically deal with that, because it's a big concern. If you look at the budget of this department, a whole lot of more than or almost half of it goes to provinces, and if we can't look at the specifics of each program, we're going to struggle to really monitor this department. Chair, and I would ask if we can also do the same on the establishment of the cooperatives, or just at least get a list of where it is, who's involved, so that when we do oversight or we visit even on our own in the provinces, that we actually can go and visit, because it's very nice to sit here and look at stats and figures, but the proof is in the pudding if we actually go down and visit the areas, and we can't visit if we just get a number of 93 cooperatives, but we don't know where it is. Chen, if we can just ask on the outcome of the foot and mouth disease workshop that was held. I know that there's still a problem on the foot and mouth disease. What is the latest and what is happening on that? And if there's any program, and maybe the same on the avian flu. I know that I think there was a new, there was a test done this week or last week where they found some bugs again. Chair, then just on the Zero Hunger program, I am a bit concerned because last week at the meeting in Stellenbosch with AgriSA, there was a gentleman that stood up and said that they were also concerned that they haven't really consulted thoroughly all the aspects of the Zero Hunger campaign. How far is it? I see on certain sections of different provinces it's been approved. I know that it was also mentioned that it's still in cabinet. How far is it? And Minister, what is the total cost going to be of this? Because I think there was a bit of a worry about that in the discussion last time. The same is on the boreholes. If we could get a list of where this boreholes is and the specific areas so that we can actually go and visit or see the areas where the boreholes were drilled, which provinces. Chairperson, and then I had a meeting yesterday with some farmers, and they were worried about the processes that's being followed with the agrochemicals and the processes to register. In the first place, they say it takes a very long time to get it registered. Unfortunately, I didn't bring the letter, but I will forward it to the DG. Certain gentleman that's been trying for months now, he says that he doesn't even get an answer or acknowledgement from the department in this registration of the process. So I want to know if there's a problem somewhere, if it's only one person dealing with it, or if that person doesn't get help, where do he go from there? And then the same on the quarantine station. People are concerned that when they find any thing on plants, or that all the whole batch gets burned, or they destroy a whole batch. And apparently, in other countries, there's a process of smoking it first and to then test again. But it doesn't happen in South Africa. So I just want to check if this is correct, the information. And if so, why is it done like this and not like in other countries if we don't have the equipment or if there's a specific problem regarding that? Chair, and then just skipping to finances, I'm concerned, and I'm not sure what the payment for capital assets all entails. Maybe it's because you need to go through a process of getting quotes, or why is that specific target so low? I understand the other ones under goods and the explanations that was given, but there's nothing really about under the payments of capital assets. And then just lastly, Chair, if we can get a follow-up on the 146 million or the money that was given for disaster management. There's a huge concern out there that it takes 2-3 years for any money, and in certain stages the money doesn't actually get to the ground. It gets lost somewhere between Treasury and where it needs to be spent on. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Can everybody hear me now? So I don't speak into the mic, if otherwise I talk too loud. But you can hear me now. Good. I want to start with the first question, and that is on page 54 or on slide 54. You talk about the catch limits that relevant and necessary scientific research has been conducted regarding the 22 fishery sectors. So I take it that is complete. And then on page 54, you go on and you ask, where am I now? On page 57, you ask request to obtain approval to commence policy review, including the general fishing policy and allocations in 8 sectors. Now, I would like to know, you know, what about the other? There's 8 sectors, but there are 22 sectors in overall, so what about them? Have they not been finished? And if you are asking for a policy review, surely it must be at the stage where it goes out to public participation or for public comment before you do the review. And then I want to talk about the issues of the new permits, the 5-year permits. That is coming to an end. I read in the media that somebody had said that process was off track, and then the department made a statement and they said, well, it's totally on track. Can you assure us that it is actually on track and that there will be no problems? Because I think by the beginning of next year it should be done. If are you extending it, or how are we going to deal with it if it's not the beginning of next year or in the middle of next year when those permits lapse? And then we talk about a small-scale fishing policy. And I've seen you've gone out to advertise for a permit for a person that to implement and develop this small-scale fishing policy. We haven't even seen it yet. So has it been approved? Where is the process? And when can we see this finished product? I also see that if you look at the last year, the second quarter 2010-2011, on exactly the same document. On page 95, I don't know if you have it there, but you talk about SG5, double point SO, 1, and it talks about increased growth, and then you talk about the key recommendations of harbor feasibility study implemented, and then you talk about the baseline is the harbor feasibility, and then you said 25% implementation, quick wins, recommendation of study achieved. And then it goes, improve the following lease agreement and property management, slipway maintenance, communication between stakeholders on site management and security. Now, I don't see that in this report, so how do you measure something like that? You know, you talk about it then. How far is that? Because, I mean, I read in the media that in Harper Harbor the ships are sunken. 7 ships are lying in the harbor sunken for a time period now. There is no security. And these fishing harbors are very important job creation activators, or what do you call it, to create jobs. You can have whole economies around a fishing harbor, you know. And then you talk about, in that report, you talk about this report, the SAHA, Ernst & Young report. It's a 500 and something page report which makes these recommendations. And none of these recommendations seem to have gone any further, because those harbors are falling apart. There's no security. The people are poaching there unabated. We have complaints all the time about these harbors that are not working. And then on the same page you talk about proclaiming from 12 to 19 another 7 harbors. You know, if you can't even look after the 12 that you have, how do you go about proclaiming another 8? And if you tell me that you don't have budget to look after the others, then how will you have budget to look after if you don't have budget to look after the 12, how will you have budget to look after the the total of 19. That doesn't make sense to me. And will you consider, as the Constitution says, that it's a local government mandate to run harvest, would you consider handing it over to municipalities to look after it? And if municipalities can't do it, the province maybe, municipalities don't have the capacity to do it. I would like to know that. And then on all the payments of the lease agreements, how is the money coming in for that? And I would like to see a report like this, and when you come back and you say, well, you know, this was 25%, we have now done 50%, so you can track what you have done. This report was like, I think it was 117 pages. We now have a condensed report, but it doesn't talk to all the other... did your mandate or your strategic objectives, did they change? Or is it not just, or is it just not worth mentioning them in a report? And then there was something that has been bothering me for quite a long time, is a loan to the land bank. Has that been repaid already, or how far is that process? Can you please inform us? Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, DG, for this presentation. On page 4, we would like to see most of my official loans and the CASP also be given to our people down there, those who really need them. We have done it, but I think it's not yet enough. We would like to see more and more and more people benefit from this Masisha and CARS. And again, I want to talk about that the ball is taken. Extension officer. We used to say this 148 extension officers, which were trained, they were not enough. And here is again 818 extension officers registered for qualification upgrading. In this area too, increase more extension officers because we have a very big country with 9 provinces. Really, they are not enough. I've already said the whole story is taken. And I want to come to the finances. You know, it's better to see the overspending, not underspending. Because underspending, it says other things were not done because of the underspending. We would like it could be rather overspending, not underspending, especially at the third quarter report. And the fishery is taken. Chairperson, I mix my things. I will come back later again. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister and the DG. I think some of the points have been taken by honourable members, but if one may keep on hammering on the same point with regards to that Mafisa Fund, I think, Chairperson, on that one would sort of request, if possible, that since there's that amount allocated for
Can you use another mic?
Thank you, Chairperson. Again, then I would want then to stress still again on having on providing the committee with the names of clients that have benefited from the Mafisa fine, their location, the loan amount, period of loans, type of activities and enterprises. If one may keep on harmony on the same point. Chairperson, with regards to food security and agrarian reform, from on page 6, it's only the smallholder producers. I wonder then if you could have given as well the numbers or the statistics with regards to the subsistence farmers in rural areas who are regarded and have been sort of given tractors to plow the land so that they could get food for themselves as families out there. And on this point, Chairperson, I think it will boil down to the old question with regards to the allocation of tractors in areas. According to the district, the local municipalities, where people we could say then have got assistance from the department, and as well the issue of those tractors, whether do we have does the department have the service providers to maintain those tractors, because obviously one has sort of experience the fact that during the when there are breakdowns on the equipment as well as even the tractors, it seems it takes time to have those tractors and equipment fixed, which results in the communal farmers missing the seasonal planting. Chairperson, if I may stop there for a while. Thank you.
Baba Panga.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG, for the report. Mine, it's few things. They link to the challenges in the main. But I want us, at least the minister, to understand that the state of the budget speech and the state of the nation by the minister and the president, it's very clear there that we might have a good pilot in terms of the budget speech who's trying to find a safe place to land, and if it does not, the pilot might crash. I'm trying to say the budget might have been a very good budget, but if ourselves were unable to land the plane, the objective identified might collapse, including what you just mentioned, the prioritization of agriculture infrastructure by the president budget. I'm trying to say, with this budget objective and the crisis we're faced with as a country of implementation, if we continue really to not spend money, Minister, we might have a good pilot driving the country, but finding very difficult to land. I'm trying to say to you, you see, you, in terms of the President, State of the Nation address, agriculture is supposed to be a breadbasket for this country, meaning we do not have any other option to salvage the poverty our people are confronted with. Meaning agriculture would be an option, DG and the minister. Meaning we must move with speed to implement some of the projects identified and increase our ability to create jobs, because it is not justifiable. Yes, there are jobs created in agriculture, for fishery and so on, We can create massive jobs in this industry if we concentrate on it. China, it makes even makes its own people to eat from agriculture. In China, each and every household has a right to grow, to give the people to eat. Therefore, we must use some of these models at DG to try to feed. Now, we need political leadership. I'm trying to say, Minister, I must spend more time here in the committee, spend more time in Parliament for us to try and shape the direction guided by the DG. Even the Deputy Minister. We might not, must not, you see, this issue of a Deputy Minister. We must all work together in this country and articulate one message. I was very embarrassed to be sitting in this committee having a deputy minister who's communicating a different message, not to support. And we can't keep quiet, Chairperson, also about those things. The deputy minister was supposed to be there when we assess the department and we contribute. We called the minister yesterday. Therefore, can't continue paying people who are not doing things. I'm unhappy with that. Sustainability, we are raising an issue of sustainability, DG. I hope that in these projects that we're funding, using an example of a project I went to Devon, the cotton project there, that has just collapsed and then we have put money, 20 million again. And my concern is that when I asked some of the officials there, what are the plans in place in terms of this, making this project that in the near future it doesn't fail, I got to learn that it was not even, they didn't even have an idea of the plans in place. To an extent, I even asked, is there a business plan for this project? I still want to know that that project we went to in Durban, the project that where you have allocated, Minister, 20 million again, is there a clear business plan that speaks on sustainability of the project? Because we have, we always put money in projects, the sustainability part of it, we're not clear about it. That's why we might have a good pilot, Minister of Finance, but it's very difficult to land. Secondly, we are fencing a project there. You spoke about fencing. There is a red line there in Devon, red line for foot and mouth disease, Minister. But what we found out there, whilst we are fencing now, for millions and millions of rand, the cattle who are affected by the disease have already passed the area that we are going to fence. To me, that's fruitless expenditure. And we must look, relook into the fencing that we want to put there. Because you can't say once we have cattle who have passed already the red line and fence here, because they will continue infecting on the other line, meaning your fence would be unnecessarily and it would be a fruitless expenditure. Lastly, because I'm raising these things based on the challenges you are raising, DG. Sustainability of projects, stakeholder engagement, and also how we operate. One problem, DG, that in a very short space of time, but I'm a South African, that I've noticed, and Minister, is that we have a challenge in the Department of Coordination. I've also noticed there in that project, the people on the ground who are supposed to do their work are not doing their work. We had a project there, Mr. something in Pongola, a farm that we went to. In that farm, this gentleman is given the farm, like 12 hectares of land and so on, whatever. But this gentleman is not farming there. He has given the same land that is given by government to the same people that they sold the land to the government. Meaning that we buy a land to distribute to our people, but the very same people give to the same people who have sold the land. What is that? Because we do not have a support program to go and support those people for them to farm. And it's our task, Minister, that when we give our people land, we assist them to crawl until they farm. Therefore, we need to go there. I think, DG, your officials need to go there. That's illegal. That expose that we might think we have projects whilst we don't have projects. Therefore, we need at least to be given a report to say, what is it that is happening? Maybe the minister, to me, it will be justifiable. I will never challenge that. If we have a minister traveling more to these farms and see exactly the plight of, we are correct. We want to liberate the poor of the poorest here. Those who do not have, but they are not liberated. Our people are cheated there on the ground. Therefore, our minister, it will be best that he travels around the country, assess some of this project, and then it will guide it to give us guidance at this level. That's why I'm saying I would appeal to you this year also to avoid the negative criticism in your department and yourself, that you spend more time with us for us to help you build this department with the DG. Thank you very much.
I think those are the few questions, Minister and the DG. Maybe just to emphasize on the point raised by Mama Paliso about decentralization of the fisheries. Again, also in the light of some of the issues raised, though not so much, you know, I would imagine in keeping with the timing which the department might wish to pronounce on, from Mr. Van Dillen. I think the mid-term or medium rather licenses or report or what called is rights are expected to come to an end sometime next year. But again, the point that we always spoke about in the committee was a need to have a decentralized fisheries branch, so that you do not have somebody from Port Nolo or from Durban having to come to Cape Town. We also did get an indication to the fact that there was a budget of this one, and it was eyed for an implementation, which we never got any feedback on. I would imagine that would be part of the feedback. The other area of interest relates to Working for Water program, which may not necessarily be part of the department's program. However, your alien plant species and also trees that are really consuming so much of water, they literally force the department to spend almost 600 million rand. Now, what I couldn't understand at one point was for private individuals who would have been volunteering, saying they can come in at no cost to government and clear those alien plant species or trees, for that matter. For them, their interest it is to harvest that and have a biomass for energy generation purposes, which for me makes sense, because you certainly have here somebody who can come in at no cost to government, somebody who can, that means saving, and somebody who can come in and talk about jobs, and also, very importantly as well, business. And then, of course, generating energy. I guess those are the few questions that we might wish to respond to. And then, of course, the cotton factory and other question related to oversight visit. We still have to go through that report and make our own assessment and see how best we take it forward. Yes, we have picked up a few that are quite urgent. For instance, there were certain deadlines on the cotton factory. We received calls also from the farmers out there, because already they're supposed to be going on harvest sometime in April, and then in June they are expected to go operational with the ginnery out there. Now, 2 weeks ago, there was meant to be a process in motion that shall have started. The calls that have come through indicate one thing and one thing alone, that 2 weeks has come and it has gone, and nothing that is happening. They couldn't hear anything from Andile Horse, who was expected to get back to them on those deadlines that were agreed upon out of that oversight. Now, we have those immediate questions in relation to the oversight visit, but of course, there are general other areas of interest that may have to wait for the report to be finalized. For instance, the fencing. Whose role is it to maintain and erect that fencing on the border lines so that you have proper controls of movement of people and goods in and out of countries respectively? Those would be questions, I would imagine, related to when that report is there. Now, you have the immediate ones, as mentioned around about, you know, the cotton ginnery out there. Yeah, thanks, Minister.
Thanks, Jefferson. I do hope that you realize that you asked a number of questions, so if I'm long, please, you have the right to stop me. Thank you very much for all those observations. I think these are observations which we correctly have questioned ourselves on, since we are doing a midterm review of all our activities. We have come halfway through our term of office, and as parliamentarians and as a department, it would only be correct for us to evaluate what we have done halfway through our term of office. The midterm review is quite extensive. It, amongst others, also allows for the minister's meeting with the department every second Monday under what is called a MINExco, Minister with the Executive, in which the executive is given detailed requests for reports. And those reports are supplied in advance, and we are interrogating those reports as we receive them. So it's not just reports that are stacking up, but it's a real serious interrogation of the implementation of policy. We are good on writing policies, we are good on writing documents, but when it comes to implementation and monitoring of what work has been done, we are lacking far behind. So the first area for evaluation will be us having the MINExco. We also have a separate management meeting with fisheries every second week, just evaluating what they do with fisheries. The third area for monitoring and evaluation is that all senior managers will now be going through their performance management from the DG to all the DDGs. Would be going through a process of performance management, and that process will also be quite strict and rigorous. The next area for evaluation would be what we call the delivery forum. We have invited all the members of the portfolio committee and select committee to the delivery forum. I hope you received your invitation. There's still people shaking their heads for me. Johnny received it on Friday already, so if you could just follow up, please. Now, the delivery forum is quite important for us because it's exactly what it means. Are we delivering? And we have given you invitations for this party, although we recognize that you're part of the monitoring wing and not the delivery wing. But of course, this is the first meeting. We have requested that you do come, that you are invited. and that you then look at the areas which you are focusing on for delivery. I think it is important that we recognize that we can't be everything for everybody, and that through a special program of prioritizing certain key areas, we have had to accept that there are certain things we'll be able to do immediately, but certain things which require long-term intervention. What we need to assess immediately is our progress in terms of the passing of legislation. So for the 2.5 years we've been here, we haven't passed a single act. And that is a serious indictment on all of us. There are 3 acts currently which have gone through cabinet, which is now with the state legal advisors. And I hope that the portfolio committee will be able to fast track those 3 acts. Amongst them would be the veterinary services, which asks for a 1-year compulsory service for all vets. That would increase our capacity to provide vet services to smallholder farmers, but to the country at large. And if you take cognizance of the number of outbreaks of diseases, then you will understand why we need to get that legislation passed as soon as possible. I think it's also incumbent on the portfolio committee to really stress the importance of passing that. That is the job of the portfolio committee. And if we do not put a sense of urgency into these acts, we would have come through our term without having passed any significant legislation. Our first area, and I want to start because this was the order of your question, would be to improve the management of fishery. Now, the weaknesses in management in fisheries is costing us quite dearly. The first one is that it is a year since fisheries have been transferred to DAF, the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. The weaknesses in the management stem partially from the integration of fisheries into DAF. The certain sections of fisheries are functions which are directly managed by DAF, and other functions they seemingly manage independently. There's also duplications of functions. So even though you have the DG as the accounting officer, I'll get to the marine living resources gives us a huge anomaly, the act. The accounting authority is the DG, but when it comes to overseeing the management of the funding collected by the Marine Living Resources Act or through the Act, the monitoring of the collection of those resources is lacking, as well as the monitoring of adherence and compliance has to be tightened up. The staff, according to the Marine Living Resources Act, belong to DAF, yet the fishing unit or MCM has its own corporate affairs, has its own support staff, and this duplication of functions has to be ended. So just as DAF has a CFO, the department has Mr. Slatwayo as the CFO, yet MCM has its own CFO. Now, if you think there has to be a decentralization of MCM, the first has to be the centralization of MCM before you can decentralize MCM. Why I say there has to be the centralization is because in response to a number of your questions, we are looking at duplication, but we are also looking at a unit which believes that it is accountable to one province. It is a unit which believes that it functions in the Western Cape, and it behaves as if it is a provincial department instead of a national department. The one recommendation is that just like with forestry, we incorporated the forestry functions into Pretoria. A number of functions of MCM need to move to Pretoria. They must move to Pretoria, so that at Pretoria we have a central and national function of MCM. And that national function then needs provincial units, and the Western Cape should then be treated as a province and not as a country. The implementation of the Marine Living Resources Act has to have a separate section. I think if we could spend a day just going through the Marine Living Resources Act and the implementation thereof, it would actually be fruitful for all of us. When we do that, we also have to give you a long list of the proposed amendments to that Act. The proposed amendments to the Act will also look quite carefully at monitoring, control, and surveillance. Everything or every section which has a multi-sectoral responsibility has serious trouble in terms of implementation. So the minute you speak of monitoring and surveillance, you have SARS, SAPS, SANDF, a number of agencies being responsible for surveillance. For the first time, we've been able to have the co-management of these units, because they all operated in silos, separately, left hand not knowing what the right hand has been doing. So for the first time, we have an integrated security unit, which integrates the running of surveillance through the SANDF, water affairs, remember environmental affairs is also responsible for surveillance, Public Works, also responsible for surveillance. SARS, because of evasion of taxes. SAPS, because we are looking at serious syndicates involved in our water. We have now our cases coming up in Japan. We have several members of staff under police protection in safe houses because these cases are international cases. Now, It is not accidental when we say other members should be part of this committee. There are times when we need to have the chair of other committees in this meeting. It is important that we bring the chair of Rural Development and Land Reform to this meeting. It's not by accident that I say they should be part of being the spokesperson of agriculture. Now, if we do not work very closely with the chairperson of all parties of land reform, as I said, Mr. Trollope has an important role to play as a spokesperson. Likewise, Mr. Cezani, Honorable Member Cezani, has an important role to come to this meeting. They engaged in a green paper process, which is going to have tremendous impact on our use of primary productive agricultural land, the change of land use, and the change of land ownership. If we do not engage with them before the green paper process is over, we may find ourselves with a policy document which is actually going to impact quite severely on agriculture. The oversight function that we are looking to is absolutely in line with working with you. You cannot police your own self. There's always going to be a particular bias if you police yourself. So a year after I'm going back to fisheries, a year since of the transfer to DAFF, we have firstly developed the small scale fishing policy. If you haven't seen a copy of it, it was distributed some time ago. Presentations were done some time ago. We are quite happy to make sure that you get it again. The lake could just make sure that they get the document. Now, the Marine Living Resources Act did not have a section for small community fishing. There's no section in the Marine Living Resources Act. So for us to have a small-scale fishing policy, the ultimate objective is to change the act. So the policy must lead towards the changing, the amendment of the act. And honorable members, you cannot leave this portfolio committee without amending the act. It will be the biggest achievement we have had in this portfolio committee. If we want communities to participate in fishing in the entire country, we must have the amendment of the Marine Living Resources Act. It's non-negotiable. So the proposed amendment to the act needs to be part of that one morning or one session. Last year we had public hearings, you had public hearings. I've requested that the document we have on all the questions you've asked which have not been answered, that it be monitored by my office, because I've given the department long enough time. Whatever hasn't been done in a year will now be taken over. What was expected will then have to be responded to. The structures that are co-responsible for delivering harbors is a very complicated structure. Now, the monitoring and management of harbors predominantly lies with public work. Unfortunately, with the change of heads of public work, you get to a certain period where you just get to managing the harbors, you get a new person, you have to start all over. So we're starting all over again with the new minister. We are part of the structure which manages harbors. We are not the prime department or the lead department on managing harbors. The funds for managing harbors is also split. There's a fund in agriculture, a fund in public works, a fund in DTI, and a fund in EDD. So there's a fund with IDC, and bringing all these funds together has been our biggest challenge. What does happen is that it's not only politicians, but I've realized that bureaucrats and administrators are also territorial. So if a budget has been allocated to them, they want to hold it to themselves. They don't see it as part of a bigger picture. When harbors are prioritized, obviously if you have a department acting like a provincial department, they prioritize that particular province. So the harbors which were upgraded, we've had to intervene. I've had to intervene to say that harbors are not only in the Western Cape. Harbors are in the entire country. And the entire country needs a program of action for harbors. We'll be meeting with the new minister as an inter-ministerial committee this week for the first time on the program for harbors. Boats. The permit conditions around boats and the tracking system of boats, as well as the monitoring of fishing vessels of our country, the monitoring of foreign vessels, has developed quite substantially, but not as well as it should have. Again here, the relationship with the Navy, SAS, and even state security is quite important. The state security gives us a confidential briefing on the state of monitoring our waters regularly, and obviously I do not give that kind of briefing because it's one of state security of our country. Now, the monitoring of these vessels coming to the harbour. It's just an unacceptable, peculiar situation. The permit condition for vessels is that the companies must inform the department when they are about to land. So when a boat is about to land, they will inform the department and the department will go out and monitor. So there isn't a 24/7 monitoring of those harbors. So if I don't inform you that I'm coming in, you're not going to go out and check where I am. So it's a peculiarity and it's part of the Marine Living Resources Act which needs to be changed. Again, Sue, we have tightened and we have now to tighten up the monitoring of the catch against the allocation. The border management agencies and security agencies are at now in a position to, through satellite information, give us precisely the catch of a boat vis-a-vis the allocation which was given through the permit. We're tracking that now through satellite. The integrated security strategy is run by SAPS and the security cluster. The Auditor General has indicated to us that they did not see a need for a forensic investigation. Remember I told you I had given it to the Auditor General. But that doesn't stop us going further. So once the report of the Auditor General is ready, we'll give it to you. This is not the general audit that you get annually of the budget. It's an audit of the department. Now, what we've also realized is that it's very important to know who does the audit. Because you can get three different audit opinions depending on who has done the audit. I'm not casting aspersions on the professionality of companies. But who does the audit does impact on the outcome. So we requested the Auditor General to do the forensic audit. The Auditor General has come back and said there is no need for a forensic audit, which means we need another mechanism of evaluating. The issuing of rights, the detail you'll get from the department, I'm again asking that you have one morning session just on fisheries. The revenue collection surprisingly received an unqualified audit report. Now, we are all adults. You don't need to have a doctoral degree to think that if you receive an unqualified audit for the collection of revenue, that we really have to go deeper into that audit. The amendments, I cannot emphasize more the amendments to the Act, because the amendments to the Act will also assist us in policing different units more carefully. The small scale fishing policy will be the 23rd fishing policy that we develop. The policy will go through the economic cluster tomorrow. From cluster it must go to Cabinet Committee. From Cabinet Committee it comes back to you. So the first gap I told you was the gap, the first gap in the Marine Living Resources Act is that there is no small-scale fishing policy. And no mention, there isn't a single mention of small-scale fishing in the Marine Living Resources Act. The second gap in the MLRA is that aquaculture is not dealt with and is not mentioned. So that is the second gap. We also have a draft aquaculture strategy policy, which is now ready for you to look at. So once you've looked at those two policies, I would like to fast track the adjustment of the MLRA to include monitoring and smallholder fishing, small-scale fishing, as well as aquaculture. Now, you would understand that this is a lot of work for this year. The legal services at fisheries has to be improved. for beef stock. Because whilst the legal services at fisheries is insufficient, we'll continue getting advice which is insufficient. There's been the February consultative process for the division of the quota system. What is that? The consultative process?
The
rights allocation. The first round of consultation has gone for through the department. The NEDLAC chamber will see the small scale fishing policy has gone through NEDLAC. What we now want is to, we've already done a presentation to you. The next presentation has to be the implementation plan of the small scale fishing policy. And Honorable Paleso, that's where all your concerns by the implementation plan, you have to be very careful that all your concerns are addressed. Because it's senseless having all these beautiful policies and this beautiful act, but when it comes to the implementation plan, there's a huge gap. And the implementation plan must include monitoring and evaluation. The MLRA Act allows for the collection of revenue. It's a, what is it? Category A company.
Public
entity. What we're looking at and where we need your guidance, and when we say we need your guidance, it's not as if we're not doing our work, but we want your views as well, is whether we should follow the route of having MCM as a fully fledged public entity, or whether MCM should still be part of agriculture, forestry and fisheries, with a national unit based in Pretoria and provincial units based in the nine provinces. If we have it as a fully fledged public entity or as an SOE, it would then have a board to manage fisheries on behalf of the minister. This is the one option. Please don't report it as, this is what I want to do, and there's huge pandemonium tomorrow in the media. The second option is that the branch must function more strictly under DAS. It will mean that the Marine Living Resources Act has to comply with the acts which we have in DAS. So what this is, what this basically means is that in both instances we must look at the collection of revenue, the use of the revenue is collected, as well as our ability, legal ability to generate a profit. Is it within our interest as a government to be generating a profit out of the proceeds of crime? So because if you return abalone, confiscated abalone, we are actually benefiting from the proceeds of crime. The feasibility study on harbors was delayed. We are not apportioning blame, but the change of leadership in public works has made it quite difficult for us to implement the feasibility. So I think you need to see that feasibility study of harbors. Have you handed it to all members?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, previously it was handed to members. Make sure that the new members also, that you write down a list. If you're new, just make a list of all the documents you haven't received. The implementation forum for harbors mandates the DGs to chair the implementation forum. We have also been asked to expand the Harbour Steering Committee. The Harbour Steering Committee, once it's expanded, will include premiers as well as MECs delegated by the premier to attend. Because in some provinces, harbors are with economic development. In other provinces, harbors are with public work. Although the constitution doesn't allow us to devolve harbors to provinces. Constitutionally, it's a national function. There's certain, maybe here and there, there's an aspect of it which can be done.
Point of order, I just wanted to say the question was that, and we're not talking about the national harbors, we're only talking about the small fishing harbors, and that constitutionally is local government's function. I'm not talking about the international harbors.
No, I'm coming to two separate, that's the one section, okay? The smaller harbors, who you also come to the smaller harbors, right, the plan we have for the smaller harbors. There's currently 14, right? 12 small harbors. Yeah, but they'll give you the details. I'm speaking too long, but you've asked all these questions. So. Okay? The flood relief has had three different types of funding. The first was the $63 million for mitigation money. Where's Jacob? And the $63 million for mitigation money has to be spent on mitigation. Then there's the one set of money that went to local government. Flood relief money that went, or disaster management money that went to local government. The money that went to local government allocated a very, very tiny amount to agriculture. They took most of the money for roads, for houses, and for other local government priorities. We were then lost on the set of priorities. We went back to the Minister of Finance, and we got money through the adjustment estimate, predominantly for the Northern Cape. Not because Honorable Member Paleso and I have a bias towards the Northern Cape, but because the farmers in the Northern Cape were the most severely affected. That money came in December, and you can imagine if the floods were in January and the money is allocated in December, it will be spent exactly a year after the flood. And the farmers in the Northern Cape are really struggling with the, what do you call it? Divala. It's got a fancy English name. Yes. Yeah. No, it's a levy. The right English name is a levy. Yeah, it's not a way, it's a levy. Okay. So, anyway, with that fancy name, what we are, the policy that we have has to be revisited. We have asked the large farmers, commercial farmers, to contribute 50% towards the flood damage, and we will top it up with the additional 50%. We've asked the smallholder farmers to contribute 20%, and we'll top it up with 80%. However, farmers are having tremendous difficulty in contributing the 50% and the smallholder farmers the 20%. That's where it got stuck. It got stuck when it switches and contributes. We haven't submitted an alternative financial strategy. We may have to submit an alternative strategy because if it is stuck with the owner's contribution, isn't it better for us to fix less than to fix nothing at all? So we may fix fewer of these levies if only the state money is there. So shouldn't we rather fix fewer of these levies instead of fixing all of them? Because if we need to fix all of them, we need a contribution by the farmers, which they cannot give.
The second area is also to encourage farmers to take out insurance, because government cannot always be responsible for disasters. If you are farming close to the flood line, you must have an insurance to cover you. The state cannot be your insurance. It's as simple as that. DG, you go on to all the fund, the flood relief fund. Chairperson, I think you're getting tired of me, so I'm going to go skip a lot of things now. Can I start skipping? Just very carefully, Chairperson, when you do call us in for CASP money, let us look at CASP, Mafisa, Ilima, Lexema. Let us look at all the conditional grants. We are not allergic to criticism. So we certainly, please do not get the impression that we are allergic to criticism. In fact, we listen to what you have to say. And in every committee meeting, I receive a detailed report of your comments. There's two members of my staff who attend all your meetings. And for each and every meeting that you speak, I receive a verbatim report of what you have said. And we do take that into account when we do planning. Very quickly, the fishing harbors will only improve if we start assisting more communities to participate in those harbors. So whilst black people don't have boats, they will not be participating in those harbors. So we're entering a negotiation with DTI to say that you cannot give a second round of quotas. It cannot be this quota review if you do not have a system of supplying boats. DTI can supply boats. They have a fund for it. And we're also looking at private sector giving the fishing communities off-take agreements. So you have a market for their fish. Instead of them selling their fish at the harbour for 1 rand, you give them a company which will give them an off-take agreement. And we are not hostile towards Massmart, Walmart. We just want them to guarantee the farmers of the country would become a supplier to Walmart, Massmart. Once they start bringing in cheap imports, we are going to cry. So with Walmart, Massmart, they are also issuing us undertakings to buy fish from small communities. If those small communities have a market, it means we will be able to justify why we give them boats. And Rams, Walmart, Massmart also said they prepared to buy boats. Eh? But those are negotiations we're now having with Walmart, Massmart. Very quickly, when we, I'm going to ask the department to look at the foot and mouth disease, the balls and all of that. Now, again, the media doesn't seem to understand why we need to speak to our importers. Because if we sell our wool predominantly to China and you have Rift Valley fever stopping us from exporting to China, it means we must speak to the Chinese so that they understand that they can still import because the window period of us being declared Rift Valley free is still not finalized. But once you stop exports, the revenue which is lost is catastrophic. With the small wool growers, their problem with a point of origin makes it impossible for them to export their wool anywhere in the world because they don't have point of origin. Again, you can ask the importer to relax that requirement. So again, we've asked the Chinese to relax the requirement of point of origin of wool. The smallholder farmers, the small growers, are the ones who are mostly affected. So when we say we're talking to the Chinese, people think you are making a joke. It's actually a reality. If the importer relaxes certain requirements, it makes it possible for us to export. The same with some, with the, Dr. Modisani, is that right? As well as the quarantine for foot and mouth disease. We'll also speak about when we'll be able to export our meat again. With the avian flu, to save our ostrich industry, we then focused on the export of feathers and hides. BBC ran a good program on it. Was it? It was BBC. No, CNN. Right? CNN. So that industry would have collapsed if we didn't subsidize it. So we paid heavily for the avian flu. What is the figure now? In total? Yeah. In total, both allocations. We gave them two allocations. Did you? Do you have an idea of the total? Is Joseph here? Right? 47 in total. That's what we paid to the ostrich farmers. But the small ostrich farmers are still a huge concern. If we do not further subsidize them, a number of them will be wiped out. Our concern is also the workers. Because once workers lose their job, it's very difficult to get them back into to jobs. Honorable Member Stein, we have, let me give you the correct statistics there. We have a number of posts which we are waiting for Cabinet to approve. 3 DDG posts are now with Cabinet for Cabinet approval. No? Three for Cabinet approval. You must understand that I appoint up to the level of DDG for the DG and 2 deputies or another minister and a deputy. It's not very easy getting 3 ministers, deputy ministers together. To get that panel to sit and interview is something short of a miracle. Then it has to go through vetting and the qualifications audit. SAQA can take anything from 2 to 3 months. It takes us sometimes up to 2 to 3 months just to get SAQA to verify qualifications. In more than 3 DDGs, by the time we were about to go to Cabinet to approve, because remember it must still go now to DPSA. By the time we got to Cabinet for approval, the person already received a new better offer, a new better lucrative job. So you lose good candidates. On 2 occasions in fishing, we lost 2 very qualified candidates. The one to Daniel, who offered this candidate a much better salary. When we had gone through the interviews, completed the process. The same happened with Dr. Mohajani, interviewed, completed her, and then she went to Northwest. And you have to start the process all over again. We had the DDG trade. We completed the process. Took us a while. Interviewed, completed all the verification. Then he made us wait a month or 2 for him to start employment. He came, worked for a week and left. We have to redo the process. So it's not easy, but now, this year alone, we have 2 confirmed. 2 confirmed and how many now by Cabinet? 3. The post we still have with cabinet now. Well, the one I did this week, last week, it's three. Okay. So by the first half of this year, I would have all the DDGs confirmed. If they do not decide to take better offers. You cannot stop someone if a person gets a better offer. So there are certain areas where you have to call in other portfolios, even if it's just the chair. The one that you must concentrate on is green jobs and biofuel, as well as the feedstock for biofuel. The second one is those green jobs and what we consider to be green jobs. We've spoken about the harvest. Then the overlaps with rural development and land reform. The only way you're going to understand those overlaps is if you call them in. Now, at some stage, Chairperson, we have to see what jurisdiction you have over other departments that impact on you quite heavily. The Department of Water Affairs impacts on us so considerably because 60% or 67% of water is used by white commercial farmers. When they no longer use those water rights, they expect the state to give them permission to sell those water rights. But if they sell those water rights, we'd never achieve any transformation in the ownership of water rights. And it is not only land that we are going to have to respond to. We are also going to have to respond to the allocation of water, the equitable allocation of water. What we are talking about in government is the triple challenges of inequality, poverty, and unemployment. So when you monitor, I'm asking you to please look at monitoring inequality, the gaps between the haves and the have-nots, the gaps between white farmers and black farmers. Inequality, unemployment, and poverty. Poverty, it's the zero hunger policy that we're trying to implement. We are again this year going to clamp down quite heavily on monitoring and on farm workers and the rights of farm workers. It's an area that hasn't received enough attention. We had the Farm Workers Summit. There's a host of decisions which were taken at the summit. We'll then go back and report on the decisions which were taken at the summit. Coming to very, very quickly, the end of this period, DG, would you want Sue to just take us through the allocation, okay? The process is well on track, Chairperson, the rights allocation, the new rights allocation. But if you do not follow it in detail, step by step, you are going to be misled. So I'm pleading to members not to follow the rights allocation process through the media, but to call us in. That process, the rights allocation process, it's a very, very cumbersome process. Don't come in at the tail end when we're already allocating rights and when it is difficult for us to redo the process. I want you to follow those rights allocations quite correctly. The first thing that we want is a fishing indaba or fishing summit. to get to the bottom of the rights allocation. The second area is a full commission of inquiry on when we started allocating these rights to where we are now. If no forensic investigation is required, then I believe a commission of inquiry should take us from where the rights were allocated to where they are now. There was a 2009 fisheries performance review. Now, that 2009 fisheries performance review, remember I've asked you for one morning just on fisheries. We need to look at it. We need to look at the legal situation and what we can do to revitalize the fishing industry. When we do the revision process, we have to look at who got the rights, the original rights. Do these people still have the rights? If they have sold those rights, who they have sold those rights to? We need to look at if those rights have become paper rights, where the real value has been sold to the big players. So this is the list that we are going through. Before we allocate new rights, we have to blacklist people who are corrupt in the industry, so that when we have options on the way forward, we do not give the same culprits rights again. Now, that's what I'm asking you. This is such a polluted, it's a polluted area. Nothing is clean here. It is so polluted that I'm asking the members to monitor the activities very, very carefully. We are then also going to look at the activities of the current rights holders. If their activities are such that we cannot allocate them new rights, they need to be told this. We're also looking at the conditions for allocating those rights. And the process has to stipulate very clear conditions for the allocation of rights. So the conditions have to say, you know, if you have received the rights, this is what you can do with them, and this is what, if you do sell them as paper quotas, you are not going to get them. And we have to section 28 them. We can only section 28 if the department's management is in place. So I cannot go to court and section 28 companies when I don't have the correct information and paperwork of the total allowable catch vis-a-vis the catch, vis-a-vis the owner of those rights. The fishing summit in Indaba, it must happen this year before those rights are allocated. The new rights have to be allocated in 2013, the end of 2013. So it's 2 years for us. So we're way ahead of the time frames requested. But because fishing is such a controversial matter, I'm not going to rush this process. So we want to know what happened to the 1994 rights. 1991, we need to know what happened when there were different types of rights given to people. Some of them got the long-term rights. You just don't believe how messed up this area is. So you also comment on those how if each period of what period, which type of rights, because different types of rights were given at different times. But the history has to be the history of fisheries. You cannot discard what happened in 1994 and take decisions in 2013 forgetting what happened in the history of these rights. Of course, we are going to meet with resistance. There's very huge players in the area, but we have been taking them on. And once we get proper legal advice, we are able to do certain things. But obviously there's legal processes that we follow. In the fisheries industry, you have to accept that you'll be challenged in the court for every decision you take. That is why the administrative processes in this area, those administrative processes have to be above board, lily white, squeaky clean, and followed to the letter. The minute an administrative process is compromised, it compromises the legal processes, it compromises a whole host of areas for decision making. So you wanted me in the meeting, you got me in the meeting and I spoke too long. So forgive me, next time you can chase me away if I speak too long. I haven't even started with forestry. You can give me a morning for forestry as well. Thank you.
Okay.
Those were the policy matters, you know, because I tried to give you, after 2.5 years, where we are with policy, and as a committee, where you need to tighten up on policy. So I'm not going to ask the department to repeat policy and the policy gaps. I hope I gave you quite a bit of policy. And there's, besides the 3 acts which you must get through, there's 3 more I'm putting through. And I'm also, you have to look at an agriculture laws amendment bill very urgently. If you look at the front of this document, you will see the number of laws which you are governing. Is it this document? Where's the one with all the laws? Is it in this one? Yes, in the strategic plan. You will see that there's a number of outdated laws. So there has to be an agriculture laws amendment bill coming to you. It has to come to you this year. Thank you, members.
I thought, Minister, as you were talking still on policy, you would say something on Agri-B charter processes and also IGP.
Hey, I thought I'm speaking too long, so I was getting a little embarrassed.
So just to sum up on those 2 areas.
Thank you, Chair. The area now for single attention is the BE charters. Agri-BE, forestry BE, and the fisheries BE charter. There is no fisheries BE charter. So the gaps have to be looked at. When I come back for my 1 day session, I'll really block out just a day for fisheries. When I come out one morning, I think you only need a morning for me on forestry. There's decisions on forestry which say that in 10 years, what percentage of the SAP is in Mondi? 20%. Have to be black owned, eh? The BE targets. 25%. Alright, so those targets, Chairperson, in forestry, for the SAP is in Mondi, within 10 years, they have to reach the 25% black ownership target. We are 3 years since the forestry charter. 4 years. 4 years since it started. Since the target was agreed upon. 4 years. We haven't done anything. So, 6 years left and 25% of Sapien Mondi must belong to black, historically disadvantaged individuals. Of those 10 years, you have 2 more, so it would have been 6 years when you hand over. And we cannot hand over BE targets that still reflect 000. The Agri-BE documents, Chairperson, what we think is the targets are still very aligned to the DTI targets. And this is another area for co-governance with rural development. Now, when we have an opportunity, you have to sit down and speak about co-ownership. Because through equity schemes, we have started the possibility of co-ownership. And the Agri-BEE Charter should further develop co-ownership. Now, I'm not going to go into the details because it will be misconstrued. Once the media gets hold of it, you just ruffle too many feathers. But we carefully have to look at those Agri-BEE targets, the contents, as well as the monitoring and implementation thereof. I'm going to ask the DG to get into the actual management of those charters. There's two things that this year I'm working on quite toughly. The one is the trusts, the boards that became trusts that fall under the NAMC. The transformation of those trusts. Those trusts have, you know which trust I'm referring to. The maize trust, the wine trust, the deciduous fruit trust, the winter cereal trust. Those trusts did only stipulate that 20% of the proceeds of government levies have to go to black farmers. Now why would you collect a levy from the industry when only 20% of it goes to black farmers? Those trusts were the boards. They were the marketing boards, the credit boards, and those boards really helped white farmers to get onto their feet. Now, if the trust now only give 20% to black farmers, there's no way in which we're going to meet our Agri-BEE targets. The Agri-BEE scorecard, the implementation of the Agri-BEE scorecard is one of the key priorities for political priorities and policy priorities for the ministry this year, as well as the transformation agenda of all our trusts. Then we'll also have to look at if we still need those trusts. There's some trusts which sit with 12 million rand, and which trust is that? Ramses, trust only with 12 million rand. DG, you know, one of the 13 trusts. Now, the trusts use the interest. Now, the interest of 12 million rand, what can you do with that for a year? Whereas if you combine the money of the trust, the combined asset value of all those trusts, over a billion, and you can do more with the interest of a billion than you do for dividing that into very small units. I'm not going to check. I'm going to ask the DG to go into, again, the detail of the BE charters, the lack thereof in fisheries. There is no BE charter for fisheries. So when you look at the revision of the Marine Living Resources Act, you should also bear in mind that there is no BE charter for fisheries, and that the only BE prescripts that we use in fisheries, is the BE of prescripts of DTI. Thanks, Chief.
DJ?
On the Agri-BEE charter, all I can say now is that the process has gone through the CEO's forum. It is now on the process of being gazetted. It is now with the DTI. So that formal process of handing it over to the DTI has taken place. And I think the DTI now is going to do what they call a public hearing process to consult on it and to finalize the gazetting process. That's where that is. On the fisheries charter, the briefing that I've received is that DTI is not very happy about us having another separate fisheries charter. They believe that what they have is sufficient for the work for all the various sectors of the country. So that is what the DTI is saying, Honorable Pillis. I think that, of course, the members can engage with the DTI on that matter. So that's basically where we are on that.
Sorry, DG, that's again one of the cooperative governance matters, where more than one department governs, co-governs, where there's co-governance and the areas blur and overlap. Honorable Paliso, nobody wants to take responsibility. One blames the other, and the other blames the other. And you just see everybody blaming each other, but nothing happens. The other area that you also co-manage with DTI is the cooperatives and agro-processing. We also co-manage with DTI and EDD. And that is why agro-processing and cooperatives have been so difficult to manage. Because a little bit is sitting here, another little bit is sitting there. I think social development is also now doing cooperatives. And rural development is also doing cooperatives. So the management, it becomes very, very tricky. I could have said something else, but you understand the management is just not easy. Thank you.
I think quite a number of questions were well responded to by the minister, so we will not really repeat those. The issues, I'll just take some of the questions that were raised, and then the others, I will invite the various colleagues to answer them. I welcome, Chairperson, your recommendation on a special session on caste and the Mafisa, etc. That would be useful for us to give a more detailed briefing on what we're doing with those financial interventions. The issue on zero hunger, the certain, I think for the better part of this financial year, we have been consulting on zero hunger. We have presented it to some degree also to the CEO's forum at the beginning of the financial year, but we still plan to go back to them to brief them on. I think the issue though of the zero hunger is that it is specifically designed for smallholder farmers, and we have consulted them. I think the very first discussion around zero hunger was presented in the NAFU conference. Every time there was only one black farmers organization. So all the leadership of black farmers were there. It was in the initial, very first public discussion with zero hunger. It was embraced by them. So we've done that discussion. We will share, of course, with commercial farmers, etc. But I think it is important to make the point that zero hunger is for smallholder farmers. It is designed for them. It is a preferential procurement intervention in their favor. So that is a clear character of it. We would want other people, of course, to support us on it, but we must understand who is primarily purpose is. Yes. There was a question raised on marketing. I think that we would want to accept that the interventions we put on marketing have not really worked. We tried to assign senior people there to work in that area, those marketing fairs, but we must accept that we've not moved much. The decision we took yesterday, not only on Makatini but vis-a-vis all the irrigation areas, is that we are going to have established what we call a government component structure that's going to assume responsibility for all these areas that in the former homeland that have got irrigation potential, that were once irrigation schemes. Because handing it over to, or not assuming full responsibility for them, or allowing them only to be run by provinces, has led to a very ad hoc management of these schemes. We would want to assume full responsibility for it. And we're going to ask support from the committee, because if we're really going to rejuvenate all these, there are about 50,000 hectares of land that can be put under irrigation. That's a lot of land. That would be a massive transformation potential if it was to be realized. But it's going to be costly. to get there. So we need support from everyone that we're able to rejuvenate the Mokha irrigation scheme, KFU, all of these irrigation schemes that are all over the country, so that really they can. But it's going to need was some of the infrastructure has gone down there. It's not the, but we want to establish an instrument at a national level that will assume responsibility for them. Okay. I think those were the issues that I felt I would want to comment on. And I would like now to invite other colleagues to handle some of the other questions.
If just before you hand over, if you just to comment on the IGDP processes.
Thank you for that, Chair. The IGDP program, as you are aware, we've been working on this since this new administration, which was an attempt on our side first to improve on previous policy statements, like the sector plan of 2001, to have one reconfigured, reconceptualized program that would take into regard the industry, the new dimensions of fisheries and forestry into the entire sector plan. So we have been working on this for some time now. The only remaining program was the further consult, because we had a conference in which stakeholders commended. They gave us their views. Broadly, there was broad endorsement of it. But we wanted to reincorporate their comments from all the stakeholders and have one binding document, which we'll then take and table to cabinet, so that there's a cabinet framework on the, or at least cabinet endorsement on the IGDP. That meeting, Chairperson, is taking place tomorrow in Joburg. That will bring everyone on board, and that will be endorsed. Once that is finalized, we're taking the outcome of tomorrow's last consultation program or process into cabinet. So that is where we are on the IGDP. Could I then, Chair, move on to invite other colleagues? Below the TDGs, I would want Mr. Ntombela to comment on the rate of vacancies. The issue of boreholes, I would like Mr. Magazana to comment or to speak on that. The issue of the registration of chemicals, I would like Dr. Motisane to talk to that. Extension officers again, Mr. Magazana, I'd like you to comment on that. Then there was a request from Nkosi Cebekulu. Even though we have a scheduled day with the portfolio committee on CAS, I still want to invite Mrs. Mchiza just to comment on the warm bodies behind the allocation of those funds, what the people, etc. And then I think this is a central decentralization. You don't have to comment on that one. Yeah. And lastly, from my side, on the sector. Okay. The issue of the distribution of tractors has been concluded. Okay, the decision of that process under the leadership of the ARC has been finalized. The some of the tractors have gone to three of the provinces, into the Eastern Cape and Western Cape. But what was outstanding, some of the money that had to be transferred to the land bank was the instruction to the land bank to pay the service providers was finalized in the past 2 weeks. So, but everything about them has now been concluded, Chair. So they are en route to their respective provinces. You may want to comment on this, CFO, but I think I've covered it. Thank you very much. Can the colleagues comment in that order? Mr. Ndombe.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, honorable members, thanks, DG and colleagues. The minister has commented on the area, the level of DDGs, what progress we have made in filling those positions. And
you're supposed to introduce yourself and your responsibility.
Okay, thanks, Chair. My name is Sipho Ntombela. I'm Deputy Director General responsible for corporate services in the department. At the levels below DDGs, I think there is a great improvement there. If, for example, we look at this, there are only two branches. Let me just check. Yeah, there are only two branches where there are vacancies at chief director level. The one is economic development, trade, and marketing. There is a vacancy of chief director agro-processing and marketing, but the process is in place to fill that position. We need to do the shortlisting and the other follow-up processes. The other vacancy that was in that branch is the one for chief director cooperatives and risk, is it? Cooperatives, yeah, this thing is so small, but it's about the development of cooperatives in this area. That position has been filled as of last week through an absorption process, right? And then with plant in the plant branch, plant production, there is a vacancy that came up recently on. Chief Director, Plant Production and Health, as a result of a senior manager resigning to take up employment somewhere else, and then the process to fill that position has started. The other vacancies that we have now at those levels are at different stages of being, filled. To find that some we are, we've concluded the shortlisting, others the interviews have taken place, and others the recommendation has been made, and so on and so on. At director level, where there is a vacancy in respect of director program development, the shortlisting has been made. The advertisement is out. What needs to happen now is the shortlisting and the other processes. Thank you. But maybe I need to mention this. The overall vacancy rate, taking the whole department into account, that is the 7,000, more than 7,000 employees, stands at 13.3%. In the last quarter that we are dealing with now, it was at about 13.5, but as at the end of January, going into February, it was at 13.3%. Yeah, thank you. Right.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to very quickly attempt to respond to the Honourable Van Dalen's question around the expiring of the permits. In some of the fisheries sectors. If I could just take a step back by way of explanation, in 2005, the department entered into a long-term rights allocation process where rights were allocated in 22 commercial fishing sectors for periods ranging from 8 years to 15 years. So on the 31st of December 2013, the rights will expire in 8 of the commercial fishing sectors. So by 1 January 2014, we need to be in a position to reallocate those rights. Another batch will expire in 2015, and then with the remainder of the 22 expiring in 2020. So contrary to the press statement that was made that the department is not ready, we will be in a position to allocate the rights in the 8 sectors that expire 31 December 2013. As the Minister explained, in order for us to allocate, the reallocate those rights in the 8 sectors and then in the remaining sectors, we firstly need to review the general fisheries policy. There's one general fisheries policy, and then there are 22 sector-specific policies. And so we need to start with the general fisheries policy and then review the eight sector-specific policies that are expiring 2013. And any changes to those policies would also, as the Minister mentioned, necessitate an amendment to the Marine Living Resources Act. And as the Minister correctly said, in reviewing this period, starting 2012 to the middle of 2013, by which time we have to have finalized the review, is an ideal opportunity for members of the Portfolio Committee, but there will also have to be public consultation, to really input into the gaps and the shortcomings and the problems that we experience with the rights allocation. Issues of funding were mentioned, monopolies, people being allocated rights that are not economically feasible, not being able to exercise their rights, etc., etc. All those issues we need to address in the review policy. And again, this is an ideal opportunity to correct the wrongs of the past. Then just lastly, two small comments. There was a question on the TACs. I can confirm that TAC recommendations have been approved in all 22 of the commercial fisheries. The last two were approved just before Christmas in the large pelagics and small pelagics fisheries. And then I think the Minister's explained in great detail about the harbours, but there was a comment about if we can't manage the existing fishing harbours, why are we looking at proclaiming additional harbours? And I think it's the issue that the Minister mentioned, that all 12 of the proclaimed fishing harbours are in the Western Cape. So the idea to declare or expand additional fishing harbours is to deal with the fact that the Northern Cape, Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal do not have proclaimed fishing harbours dedicated to the activities of fishers. And then very lastly on the comment of the chairperson around the decentralisation, so that fishers or members of the public don't have to come to Cape Town. He raised the question of the timing of that, and it would make obvious sense that we have to have warm bodies on the ground by the time that we enter into the new rights allocation process. So our, I think our time frame would broadly be by the middle of 2012, we have to have functional presence throughout the coastal provinces. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon to honorable members and colleagues. I'm Kululi Mangazan. I'm currently responsible for food security and agrarian reform. I'll be responding to two questions. One that comes from Honorable Ms. Dane that talks to boreholes, and the second one comes from Honorable Member Maswana that talks about looking at increasing the number of extension officers and secondly, training of extension officers. So I'll respond to those three. On the boreholes, we do have a detailed report in terms of, one, what process, one, does it follow when you talk about trying to assist communities with smallholder farmers or all farmers in general on ability in terms of sighting, drilling and testing boreholes. There is a detailed report to that effect, and I think that even it's mapped where those boreholes have been drilled. It also talks to roughly how many meters have we done in a particular quarter in a particular area. So I think what we will need will be to package the report in the manner that you have actually indicated, and then I think we can do that. And then coming to extension, firstly what I want to highlight is that extension is part of the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program. It's one of the pillars, the six pillars of CASP, which is Technical and Advisory Services. So it is. Now there are two areas when it comes to capacity building. We are looking at short course training programs and also qualification upgrading. There was work that was done. First, we had norms and standards to say what is it that's required to have a successful extension service. That was then followed by the work of evaluating the current extension services, and there were gaps that were identified. There were quite a number of officials, I think there were all more than 2,400, who were needing to improve their qualifications, and at the same time, majority of officials needed specific technical training programs. The program around qualification upgrading is not going at a pace that we would want it to be, because we're dealing with academic institutions. Much as we engage them at the beginning to say come up with much more creative mechanisms, because these are working individuals, how do you come up with an easy approach, a distance learning program, programs that will make it easier for these officials, because that is the challenge we have. You'll find provincial departments not much willing to release quite a number of people to go on full-time studies. That, because on the other side, it may hamper service delivery. So there's a balancing act that is needed there. But that has been the challenge. But in as far as short course programs are concerned, the numbers are much higher in that side. Currently, I think we have done almost more than 2,500 of officers in terms of short course programs in a number of things. For example, like computer, there were quite a number of officers who could not even use computers. Something that you would think that everyone should know how to operate a computer. Therefore, how do you then access information if you cannot go to? So quite a number, there's been a change in that respect. And then the other issue that we are currently busy with, because we can work on increasing the numbers. Yes, we need to increase the numbers, because when we did the evaluation, the country needed more than 7,000. The shortage was more than 7,000. And then when we received the funding in terms of how many we can recruit, the funding could only take us up to 1,000 over a three-year period of time. So that the process of recruiting also going at a very slower pace. But there are two interventions that we are looking at the present moment, especially in areas where we talk about zero hunger sites, where activities are taking place. We're saying that we do have what we call our internship program, that we take more than 300 and something interns a year, where they are first graduates from university. How can we best work with local municipalities and associations on the ground and begin to try and deploy, but with a proper guidance and a proper management? So those are some of the alternatives, to say that how can we make sure that we improve on service delivery, we are able to reach farmers better than we are doing at the moment. And then lastly, the other issue that we are currently busy now almost concluding is around to say, it has been very difficult to manage field personnel, people who are out there on the ground. And one of the things that we are looking at the moment, we are concluding a feasibility study around to say we need to begin to set up a professional body that begin to look at matters of conduct, matters of further development around extension officers. We have done some comparative studies with existing councils in the country,
and we'll soon be taking that within our internal processes first within the department, and later on, if we think this is an option that we should be considering, so that we can put more pressure as well for people that when they're out there in the communities, in the event that certain things are not adhered to, there are a lot of repercussions that they must expect. I think let me stop the chair and DJ. Thank you.
Through you, Chair, Dr. Mutisan.
Thank you, DJ. Thank you, honorable members and minister. I am Mike Modisani, the chief director responsible for animal production and health, and acting as the DDG for agricultural production, health, and food safety. The two questions that I will respond to are on the questions raised by honorable member Stain, one on quarantine station and the registration of chemicals. It is not always true that when a quarantine pest is picked up in a quarantine station, all the consignments are destroyed. The treatments can vary from, for instance, if the pest can be destroyed by irradiation, the consignment can be sent for radiation, and then, or in the past, there are other chemicals that can be used, depending on the pest of concern. But however, there is concern that some of the previously registered chemicals like methyl bromide, there are concerns that these chemicals may be contributing to the climate concerns, and then the whole world is looking into deregistering some of these consignments. So what I'm trying to say is that when a quarantine pest is picked up, it is not necessary that all the consignment will be destroyed. There could be treatments that the importer could be ordered to take the imported products through. The other question that was asked was on avian flu and foot and mouth disease. I will start with avian flu. It is true that last week or in the past 2 weeks, new farms were picked up in the Western Cape where new virus infections were picked up. And then there was also concern that one virus that we were picking up was not the ordinary virus H5N2 that we've been picking up. There was one 87 that was picked up, and it created quite a lot of concern. The other issue is the fact that we have been seeing the outbreaks going out of the controlled area, the Clean Karoo Valley, and then that has been again very concerning. And then recently we had an evaluation by foreign scientists that who were invited by the Ostrich Business Chamber to look at the concerns that could be coming from the control of the disease itself, and a report, we are expecting a report this week, but some of the concerns that were raised is that they could be the density of the ostriches in that area is too high, and then the other thing that we may have to look into is the question of changing the farming practices, because as you may know, the industry is very complicated itself with day old chicks being moved from the hatchery to a farm where they are going to be grown and then be moved into a feed lot and then be taken into a finishing lot. And that is something that we will have to look into the Ostrich Business Chamber and the Ostrich Farmers themselves in general. But the even though we do have a biosecurity protocol that has been approved, we will have to look at improving on this protocol to try and keep the disease out. A finding of new farms infected last week delays the possible export of ostrich meat into particularly the EU by a further 3 months. Therefore, we will have to monitor the situation and then be able to report back to this committee. The other concern that was raised, or the question that was raised, was the issue on foot and mouth disease. We have informed the OIE, the international body on animal health, in October last year, that we have declared the end of outbreak in KwaZulu-Natal, but we are dating back to July last year, considering that since then, we have never picked up any new positives. And in terms of going forward to apply to the OIE to recognize South Africa's zone free of foot and mouth disease, there are certain steps that we are going to have to take. I wish to emphasize that we are not going to apply for reinstatement of the previous status because it won't be possible. What we will be doing is we will be applying for a new area, and then that means that the processes will be much longer. We are currently conducting surveillance in the northern part of KwaZulu-Natal with the hope that we are not going to find any new infections. Up to so far, it is promising that we won't find any new infections. And then once we don't find any new infections, we are going to, I think there was also a question raised on the red line fence. We are going to move the red line fence more towards the north to try and make the area at least 15 kilometers long from the Mozambique border. And then from there on, a bigger area of the country will be declared free without vaccination. But if we don't pick up any new infection in the northern part of KwaZulu-Natal, there are other provinces that we have to look into, particularly Limpopo, the concern being from the point of view of bordering the Kruger National Park, and then also Mpumalanga on the eastern side, because there are also concerns. The members may probably know that we had picked up infections in the controlled protection zone of Mpumalanga, and then it is still in the protection zone, which doesn't affect our status adversely. And then from there on, we'll be applying to the OIE, and then the hope is that by May next year, the OIE will be recognizing South Africa as zone free from foot and mouth disease. The most important thing to remember is that even if we do have a status of infected country, through bilateral negotiations, we have been able to make it possible for exports to continue taking place with the guarantees that were given to our neighboring states in particular. Thank you, DG. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, Dr. Motisan, Assistant Chief.
Thank you, DG, Honorable Chairperson, the Minister, members of the committee. My name is Elda Mshiza. I'm the Delegated National Transferring Officer for the two conditional grants, which is CAFS and Ilimalitsima. I note that we will have a special session on the conditional grants, and I think the details of the report for both conditional grants will be shared in that meeting, which would also include, as the DG was talking, the warm bodies and how do we monitor and evaluate and follow up on our money that we give to provinces.
just a snapshot of where we are at is that we determine based on the previous performance of provinces a disbursement schedule. And for CASP, by end of quarter three, we had only disbursed about 65% of the total allocation to provinces. And for Ilemaletsema, we had disbursed about 75% of the total allocation to the province. And if you look at the performances at end of quarter one for CASP, we are sitting, if you look at the total allocation, at about 62%. But their performance against the drawdown, which is the transferred funds, was at 95%. There are indeed struggling provinces. One in is Gauteng, particularly where CASP is concerned. And we've engaged strongly with the province. We have sat with the management team as a national assessment panel. We have assisted them to look at the priority areas that they can finance with the conditional grants. We've also been invited to the MEC Lekgotla because the MEC was also concerned with the performance of the province. And in that meeting, we were able also to sit with the whole management of the province to show them the areas in which they could leverage on spending the money. I think one of the biggest challenges for Gauteng was that they were not leveraging on the conditional grant as in a supplementary funding to their equitable share, and more focus was actually looking at spending their equitable share, but we will see a shift in their performance for the fourth quarter. I think I will stop there only to share with Ilemaletsema is that, as you all know, focus is spread on increasing agricultural potential, agricultural production, as well as areas, we unlock areas of agricultural potential. And in our report to the portfolio committee, we'll talk about the farmers that were supported and which areas were supported, whether it was crop, livestock. We'll talk about the agro-processing facilities that the provinces have actually started, as well as the hectareage that has been planted. And as at end of quarter three, a lot has happened since end of December, but by end of December, 35,848,000 hectares were already planted. That is really a snapshot of the report that we will share and engage, and as Minister had said, we accept criticism because it actually improves our performance. Thank you.
Us to be able to whatever we do, we have that at the back of our mind. So that also suggestions shall be welcomed as to how best we move forward. Whether we make use of the time when we have a presentation on CASP and all other funding structures, or we go on until 2 o'clock, so that when we contribute, we also come up with a suggestion as well going forward. Mrs. Tay?
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to continue until 2 o'clock. I don't know about the other members, but we can also maybe put questions in writing, so that the concern, Chair, is that if we only start asking questions on a presentation when we at the meeting, it usually takes a long time because there's a lot of follow-up questions that I want to ask on the answers, and we usually don't get time for that. So I think we must work on a system where we could, if we get the presentations beforehand, start asking written questions so that when the presentation is done, the department could answer some of the questions while doing a presentation.
especially when we have a broad presentation like today that cover all the sections of the department, it becomes very difficult. So, Chair, I think the DG is already left late for his next appointment. So in that vein, I think we can continue until 2 o'clock. But if this needs to go, then we...
You done?
Yes. Chair, but I've asked the question specifically about the finances, the last section of that wasn't answered now.
Mrs. Patterson?
Thank you, Chairperson. Way forward. When the presentation of the fisheries specific come, it must also give us the details of the poachers who are the seals. What is the strategy of the department also, because the minister didn't inform us how do they deal with the seals, because those are the biggest poachers of the long line, traditional long line fish. The other way forward is the professionals program. DG, you must also inform us at the next meeting, how do you deal with the professionals program recruitment, because really the vacancy rate is a concern. When we listen to the responses, then one asks yourself about the vacancy rate. How are you going to do this without warm bodies? Thirdly, way forward, the provincial summit is already, DG, 1 year behind schedule. We really need now a time frame when you come back to us with a presentation of fisheries. And also, we want options. You must come with options before us with the audit presentation of the branch that is not accounting to anybody, MCA. It's not accounting to us. We can't say when one individual is accounting on just one portion. We it's not enough. We are not happy with that. Although there is progress, but we are not happy at all. And the other one is also when we will have a joint, we must have a joint meeting with all the stakeholders in the fishing industry. Public Works, Honorable Minister, the current Minister of Public Works informed the other portfolio committee where we are, that there is technically no department in Public Works, so we are going to sit with a real problem in terms of the lease agreements with Public Works and the fishing fish factories. So we need information on that lease agreement. It's one outstanding question that we are waiting for responses for a very long time. And also the mining houses must be also responding to the question of the harbour, because they are the biggest users in the other provinces of our harbors. The Western Cape won't know that because they don't have that problem, but it is in other provinces the question of matter of a worrying factor, the mining houses. Chairperson, I will pause. I will leave the others for written requests to the minister and the DG. I'll send my other comments in writing to the DG and the minister. I thank you, Chair.
And maybe perhaps how we might wish to deal with it is to use time now probed until 1:30, and without getting a feedback as of now, we allow the written replies to the questions that members are having. For instance, just as a follow-up, Mr. Van Dalen, on the matter related to harbors, both big or commercial harbors and also small harbors for fishing communities is a source for concern. You certainly have Public Works that is the landlord. For instance, we went to West Coast. You're making noise, man. So that when we go to Sea Harvest and also Oceana, we ask specific questions in relation to the management and the lease agreements that they have about the harbors that they are stationed at. We don't extract much of leverage, if you like, from the department as fisheries department, so that you don't have your sea harvest and your oceanas of this world literally having a free range without Department of Fisheries, Agriculture, Forestry extracting its part in terms of beneficiating or even allowing some of our communities in those areas as part of the conditions, if you like. I'm aware that the question had more to do with the smaller, harbors. But I'm equally still on the bigger harbors, such that conditions must be set and the relationship between the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries and Public Works, so that when Public Works issues out any of those, leasing agreements or lease agreements, such conditionalities must be factored into. Precisely because as we speak now, those companies, they literally act as if they own those harbors, having no one to call them, to account on any matter. Precisely because they have a direct relationship with the Public Works. And then as fisheries, you have nothing whatsoever that can really call on them to account as those commercial fisheries organizations. The other question I did ask has not been responded to in relation to the alien plant species and trees. So much money is being budgeted by government. Once again, it could be a matter of a relationship between environment and Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries. But the issue for me talks more to, I'm not sure what the budget is, whether it is 600 million rands per annum that has been made use of to clear those. I'm saying to myself, here is a private person who says I can clear this without charging you, government. Which effectively means to me, here is this 600 million rand that can be made use of elsewhere. Because also in addition to that, this private company says it can equally be able to create jobs and business and energy at the end of the day. So for me, these are the kinds of issues that I would imagine we are supposed to be jumping for without thinking much. Of course, following all the due processes. And Mr. Fanda?
Yes, I just want to clear up something. I didn't say about the harvest that I thought that the Western Cape was superior in any way. I'm talking about the bigger picture in the country, and I do realize that in the Northern Cape there are also harvests, and in Natal and everywhere there should be harvests. That is, Eastern Cape is also, where there is a sea. I can't see a MCM in the Free State because there is no sea there.
There are big dams there. The big dams.
Okay, but then I don't know that part of it yet. I'm worried about the sea at the moment, and the harvest. So, and I also did not mean that MCM or the fisheries department should not be involved in it. But I'm saying the management of the harbors and the infrastructure that is there. You must remember that harbors are integral to the development of communities around it. And I think that some like local government would be a person that would be able to integrate the two much better than a fisheries department, I would say, so that they can plan around it, they can plan the infrastructure around it, and then they can keep up the infrastructure there. And I was saying, well, if they don't have the capacity, then you, the local, then and I have a legal opinion that says it is a competency of local government to do it. I will let you have that legal opinion if you want to. It's constitutionally mandated that pontoons, I think ferries, and they talk about harbors and slipways are the mandate of local government. So, you know, I want us to sit around and talk about this issue and not say, well, I want to protect my little bit and isolate it from the rest of the country. I'm not saying that just because they're in the Western Cape. I get the feeling that every if you talk about harbors, everybody says, well, it's in the Western Cape, leave it, we don't want it, you know, or we don't want to deal with it. That's the way I get that feeling.
Why are you feeling guilty?
I'm not feeling guilty of anything. I'm just saying that was the answer that I was given earlier, that they were saying, well, there's not only 12 harbors, the 12 is in the Western Cape, and they... I was asking, why do we want to do more if we can't look after our own here?
You seem to be hell-bent on protecting, you know, some cap.
Yeah. No, I want to have it fixed. It's broken. It must be
okay.
Fixed.
How do we... I think we have until half past one at the most. And then we shall take an approach that gets responses in writing from the department. We don't also have to force questions if there are none for now. We can simply even call it earlier.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think, Chairperson, from what we've just said with regards to responses by written responses from the department, I think, Chairperson, on that note, we need to sort of remind the department that there are some questions which were asked a long time ago, 2010, about 2011, which the committee requested that we need written responses, but so far there's nothing has come forth. I think if the chairperson says, then the department should submit written responses on certain questions. They should as well look into the previous questions that they promised they'll be finishing us with written responses and information. That's my just a remark, Chairperson. Thank you.
I guess the question, the point asked or raised by under visitor is that whilst we might wish to give each other time frames, equally, largely, the committee secretariat is the one that is supposed to be following up on those issues. So that we have a system in place that tracks all decisions taken. We don't have that. We shall plead with you, department, whilst we're busy working on that system here, that we give each other perhaps the end of next week for us to get the feedback. In fact, when we come in our next meeting, if we can have those responses in writing circulated.
Person, just in response to that, it is extremely annoying that the department hasn't responded to those questions. I think that the first weakness of the department and the DG has to do the monitoring of this. I'll take over this function again once more. I have to take over functions if the department just fails to perform. And that is responding to questions that have been put here. The second is when they give incorrect responses. And if they give incorrect responses, it means that we are misleading public representatives. And there's a process that has to be followed if officials mislead public representatives and give incorrect responses to the questions of members of parliament. The third area is that, just like with the parliamentary questions, we now sit on the department to answer the 4-page list of questions. And I think it is really totally unacceptable. This also places a lot of onus on the minister required to be everywhere, everything, and do everything. And it's literally impossible. So the outreach, each minister's outreach program, we report to the president on a six-monthly basis. Agriculture's minister has the highest rate of meeting the public and meeting stakeholders. But if you remember how many stakeholders we have in fishing, forestry and agriculture, after 2.5 years, I haven't met all of them. And it is virtually impossible to meet all the stakeholders and to go to each and every form. So on average, we take a province. If I take a province a month, one province a month, then 9 months, it takes me 9 months to rotate around provinces. Some provinces we go to every week, every second week. Some provinces like the Western Cape, I've visited all the coastal areas. And yes, Honorable Member Van Dahl, we just said there's an intersectoral committee looking at harbors and working on harbors. Mm-hmm. The lead department is supposed to be public works. We had to take over that function from public works because we were lagging before behind. Mm. The reason why we had to include more harbors is that the department only had 12 harbors in the Western Cape, which were going to be upgraded. And we cannot behave as if Western Cape is the only province with harbors. So that is why we had to increase. So maybe it didn't come out clear to you, but it's an intersectoral, interdepartmental committee. There's even an IMC, Interministerial Committee for Harbors. So we put it very high on our agenda. The same with fences. Because of our intervention, they're now going to refence the Kruger National Park. So a number of these functions we cannot perform directly as agriculture. It's impossible. It's usually impossible. But if you read the President's State of the Nation address, because of our work, rural roads will now be improved, which our farmers will benefit from. But we can't do rural roads. So rural development jobs are created separately. They have to do all the off-farm roads, infrastructure, and we will focus on on-farm infrastructure. The more money that gets spent on agriculture, the better. And the budget, if you calculate the budget that the government and the country is now spending on agriculture, forestry and fisheries, it is almost doubled. The very, very quickly, things that you have to go into detail with very soon, it's the blending regime for biofuels. Energy has published regulations on the blending requirement for biofuels. This year they are going to be signing agreements with farmers to provide the feedstock for those biofuels. So the feedstock now in the 2 billion, and we invested 2 billion in the Credoc biofuel project. We're doing it with rural development, science and technology, DTI. So a budget will come from DTI. Then land bank will give another section. Then agriculture will be expected to give a portion as well. So that is how we operate. But if we do the entire value chain, we don't count all the jobs under agriculture. Because if there's a road built, public works will count those jobs. If it is recapitalization of land reform projects, land affairs and rural development will count those jobs. So we don't count our public works jobs either. It's done by public works. The three areas, there's one area which you just never look at and that you miss, and it is our role as a country in the continent and in the globe. Our role as a country is becoming more and more important for food security. And our agriculture is not only expected to give leadership in South Africa, we are being expected to give leadership in Africa and in the globe. And then, you know, when you chop and change dates, it also makes it, because today I had to be with the G20 ministers of agriculture, and I cancelled it, I told the chair. So our country is not represented at the G20 meeting. So it makes it difficult when the meeting dates change. But in Africa, because of the shortages of food, every South Africa is relied upon to be a buffer for food security. With the famine in Ethiopia, Ethiopia, Somalia and Kenya, we had to go in and assist. The more food shortages you have, even amongst our neighbors, the more we are required to assist as a country. But as a country, we're lagging behind. The World Food Program is now procuring more food from Ethiopia than it procures from South Africa. The three critical areas for us is expanding access to markets. We have grown our markets in the continent, the Near East, the Middle East, and the Far East, so radically. In Kenya, we've now tripled our exports to Kenya, Zambia, Botswana, Namibia. I can go through a long list of African countries. We are now exporting to more than 20 African countries. What is happening is that we can now increase agriculture production in our country. The farmers now no longer need to compete at that big time for markets. Our problem now is there's a demand, but we can't produce enough. So our farmers have to go out and produce and plant. And this is going to be a boom. This will create a boom in agriculture. This will create the green revolution that we're looking for. A green revolution can only take place if there's markets. We must brief you on our access to markets. If we didn't have those access to markets, agriculture has collapsed in this country this year. The reason being, our traditional markets in Europe have crashed. They're no longer importing as they did in the past. Our traditional markets in the United States have also crashed. So by providing alternative markets to our farmers during this current phase of, the depression, the economic recession, our farmers would have gone bust because they can no longer export as much as they did to Europe. Instead now, we're exporting and we don't have enough. I can tell you that just coming out of Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Oman, Iran and Qatar, those five countries want 30 tons of lamb per week from South Africa. Now, can you imagine how many jobs that can create? So we shouldn't just be myopic and inwardly focused. For biofuel, Swaziland is already growing sugar for it. Mozambique is growing sugar. But with projects which our country supported to develop. So through the IDC, we're funding projects for businesses, expanding businesses of farmers. We must come and report to you our market access. Because this is now allowing smallholder farmers to take over the local markets, like the food school feeding schemes, the hospitals, the clinics, and that's what Zero Hunger is about. The next one we must come back to, and I've asked the department, Honorable Paliso, is to form and develop for you a comprehensive skills development strategy and a plan of action as well as a report on skills recruitment and skills retention. There's agriculture graduates, but we have extension officers who know nothing about agriculture. We have agriculture extension officers, we are giving jobs to people with no qualifications. When they get onto the farm, they don't know where to start. They simply don't know where to start. So we are working from a very low base of skills and improving that skills base, bringing in professionals, is our biggest challenge. We're at the level of DDGs. We don't need politicians anymore. We need professionals. We need skilled professionals. So the colleges of agriculture, working with education, higher education, and basic education, again an interministerial committee, but when the agriculture colleges are up and running, then they must service agriculture, forestry, and fisheries. Because forestry and fisheries should also have extension officers. But, Jay, this is part of the new act you have to drive.
On that note.
And very quickly, I must answer you. On the alien plants, the only company that I know of who wanted to do this was a company who wanted 20 years, a lease, a 20-year guarantee that they could be the sole company removing alien vegetation. And I cannot sign 20-year leases for one company to be removing alien vegetation out of in this whole country. So I sent them back saying there's no way we can sign a 20-year lease or a 20-year agreement for a monopoly, for one company having a monopoly to remove aliens for biogas. The access to finance, we must come and report to you. You have asked about the land bank. We've now lowered the interest rates in the land bank. And through lowering interest rates of the land bank, we've dispersed in the last financial year 6 billion rand in loans to agriculture. So access to finance, access to training, and access to markets. Those were our three objectives which we have managed to reach in the past 2.5 years. The next 2.5 years is going to be infrastructure, moving into agriculture infrastructure, from silos to boreholes, to fencing, to factories. Then, Chair, you need a thorough briefing on fertilizers and the development of the fertilizer industry, because we haven't been able to intervene in fertilizers. Without fertilizers, we're not going to grow the sector. Extension services, I told you, we must have it for forestry and for fisheries. Then I'll be very happy, Chair. We'll come and do these reports. Your reports of your four pages of unanswered questions.
Whilst we are on fertilizers, next week on the 6th of March, mm-hmm. we shall be having Professor Aman from Switzerland, who shall be briefing the committee on the latest scientific developments in the biotechnology. We've also extended an invitation to other committees as well. So this session shall take place at E249. That shall then take us to the adjournment of our session. We thank you, Minister, and the DG, Mama Paris. I just want to...
Chairperson, I really need to make an official request to you to write a letter to the department about the deputy minister not accounting to this committee. It's a concern. We don't know where does his responsibilities lie, but it's definitely not with this committee. He's not taking responsibility of the department, and he needs to come and account to this portfolio committee, Deputy Chairperson. I thank you.
In fact, if our memories serve us well, one of his primary responsibilities was to look into the legislation. Now, over the past 2.5 years, can we conclude the meeting? Over the past 2.5 years, we haven't had any legislation, amendment or otherwise. Okay. Members, the meeting stands adjourned until we meet next week. Until we meet on Friday, when we look at...